Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show, broadcasting from edexcellence.net with my co-host, a man whose college rock band was called Toxic Assets, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, babe?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Good. I was in Houston earlier this week, down there with those Kipsters, the Feinbergs, and that whole crowd.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It's energizing, man.
Yeah.
They're out there doing the real work, and we're up here pontificating.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got the better end of that deal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But here in Washington, we get to do things like follow every move of the Obamas, try to figure out where they might send their girls to school. Looks like Georgetown Day is a top contender.
I was at a hotel the other day, so I saw the Topo actually wrote a whole story on this.
That's right.
I'm like, Greg, I know you're listening, babe. Edgy news stuff. I'm loving
it. This is important stuff. You know, if they go to Georgetown Day, this is a school that participates in the voucher program, which means they will be going to school with kids who are there because of the voucher program.
Didn't Chelsea go to a private school?
She did. She went to Sidwell.
Did this affect the way that
was before there was an actual live voucher program with actually live kids. My point is this. If Obama kills that program, he is kicking his daughter's classmates out of their school.
Are you saying he's going to vote for this stuff because his daughter's going to get beat up otherwise and pantsed after school by these
kids? That's going to look really bad if he tries to kill that program.
That's just harsh.
So I think.
So are you encouraging intimidation by a 9-year-old?
No, I am encouraging the Obamas to pick Georgetown Day because I think that will, in effect, keep the voucher program safe. We also wonder about whether or not Malia and Sasha are going to say yes to Hannah Montana's invitation to come on her show. Do you think that's a good move?
Dude, I could so not care about this.
Oh, come on,
Mr. Now, if they were going on The Suite Life with Zach and Cody, I'd have much stronger opinions.
All right, well, okay, fine. We have a lot to cover today, Rick. We got lots of news. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. We're going to hear Amber's Research Minute. We're going to rate that reform. Go, go, go. All right, Christina, get us started.
It just sounds sad when we put it that way, doesn't it?
Okay, let's get happy by talking about the future of the Washington consensus in education.
Yes!
Is this news? Hold on. This is edgy news.
Is the Obama administration likely to buy into it? And what about Democrats and Republicans in Congress?
So, Rick, let us remind our audience about, you know, we've written about the Washington consensus in the past. Rick's cell phone is going off. Rick, how many times do we have to tell you? You come into the studio, you turn off your cell phone.
I always forget.
No, you do always forget. All right. Washington consensus. By the way, Laura, we got to, you know, give us a little extra time on this one. We've written about this for several years now, basically saying that elite policymakers in Washington have bought into this consensus. It's around closing the achievement gap as a top priority, around no excuses, you know, poverty is not an excuse, and around test-based accountability being the way to get the job done. And Republicans and Democrats have bought into that. So the question is, does the Obama team buy into that consensus?
I think they buy into the nice parts of it for sure. Everybody likes disaggregation. Everybody likes transparency. Everybody likes having some test score numbers out there. Essentially, the stuff that Clinton pushed in 94. What I think is entirely unclear is whether or not they actually like the yucky, unpleasant stuff that goes along in trying to create some sense of real pressure and coercion behind that nice stuff. The pressure for some kinds of sanctions, pressure of consequences, actually tying dollars to particular remedies or interventions or options for kids in these schools. I haven't seen any clear signals that they're actually wedded to any of that stuff.
My sense is that they will be, but I think they're going to have problems on Capitol Hill. I think you're going to see Republicans running away from the No Child Left Behind Act. You're going to see a complete collapse of support among the GOP. I think both because they're going to say, look, you know, we shouldn't just be focused on the achievement gap, but more importantly, they're going to be worried about the federalism stuff, and they're going to say, this is, you know, let's just give it back to the states. And you're going to have a lot of Democrats in Congress who are wedded to the teachers' unions who are going to fight the testing stuff.
Well, I mean, one thing to keep in mind is that one of the things that was going for Miller and Kennedy the last 6-7 years was that they were well to the right in some sense of the Democratic caucus on educational accountability, but they could always say, hey, wait a minute, the administration's way over on our right, so we're the bridge. Now all of a sudden they're the kind of the outliers here. Mm-hmm. The caucus has moved anti-NCLB and the administration is more closer to that caucus, so it's going to be interesting to see how much leverage Miller and them actually have.
Well said. You know, you made it sound like Washington pontificating was all a bad thing, but I mean, it's some.
But I like when we go out there in the real world and we talk endlessly about all these fascinating ins and outs, and I can just see the eyes glazing by the moment.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Okay, Christina, next one.
Topic two: a great story in the Washington Post raises concerns about the new Title I regulations around graduation rates. It shows that there are lots of high school kids, especially Latinos, who take more than 4 years to graduate high school because they are also working. They don't have a problem with this, but now they will be counted as dropouts and their schools will get dinged. What's the way out of this morass?
I really do have a problem with this whole idea of holding schools accountable for improving their graduation rates, because I just feel like you run into these kinds of perverse incentives. Of course, we should do a better job measuring dropout rates and graduation rates. But when you start to put pressure on schools to get those numbers up, I just think that start to encourage game playing. And then it doesn't give you much leeway to talk about these kinds of nuances. I mean, there are some good reasons why kids might not graduate within 4 years. That doesn't mean they're dropping out. And yet, you know, a one size fits all metric, you don't really get into that nuance.
I think you just went on the EdTrust hit list, but I'm going to join you there, because I agree. It's clearly good to have these kinds of metrics as opposed to not having these metrics where we've been for so long. But the reality is, if we're talking about the need to customize education, if we're talking about the need to make sure that schools are devised to meet kids with different needs and different strengths, it's insane that we're going to have this cookie cutter 4-year graduation formula across the board for all folks. And schools, regardless of the population they're serving, regardless of what else is going on in that ecosystem, are going to be expected to religiously try to drive these numbers. What we probably want is an index of graduation rates that take into account these kinds of constraints. And we also want to think about what are other ways to measure and capture high school learning mm-hmm. that aren't simply a question of processing people through these kind of industrial megaplex. Yeah.
And look, I think EdTrust has done a lot of great work in building the case for more transparency around this issue, you know, showing that most state data on this can't be trusted. I think that's all very important. Mm-hmm. I just worry about whether or not going to that next step and linking it to an accountability regime is going to create some unintended consequences.
And it absolutely will.
Last one. Fordham's daily tracking poll, available at edexcellence.net, has Arnie Duncan and Jim Hunt looking like the strongest contenders for education secretary. Are the insiders right, or is there someone else they are missing?
So what's this daily tracking poll, Mike?
So we have 10 Washington insiders telling us on a daily basis who they think the next education secretary is. They don't have to just name one person. They basically have 100 chips, and they can distribute their chips to as many candidates as they like.
Do they win something if they're right?
No.
Hey, how come I'm not one of these insiders?
I guess you're too busy running around the country. I just knew you'd be unreliable.
How? Are these people all reliable? Are they all filing every
day?
They
are. They're filing every
day. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
I mean, I'm actually not. I think the Duncan and Hunt are kind of two interesting names. Now, one, obviously, Hunt made the statement the other day about how he's not interested.
Yeah.
But everybody says that. It's kind of sad when you say, oh, I'm dying to be secretary.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much validity to give that. But I think if it's Duncan, you know, it's going to be interpreted as a statement of support for the new Democratic clique.
Really? I mean, how come? I mean, it's not like he's been known as somebody that's really roughed it up with the teachers unions.
No, right? Absolutely. And I mean, not nearly as much as, say, a Klein appointment.
Right. I mean, that's why it seems like Arnie Duncan is also somewhat of
more
safe. But you've got to assume that Obama is going to pick somebody who is going to be okay for both factions of the Democratic
Party. And that's what's great about about going with Hunt or the Colin Powell rumor, is that this lets him kick that can down the road. Yep. Everybody can claim that Hunt's real instincts lie with them.
Yep. Do you think the same with Janet Napolitano or Tim Kaine? Do you pretty much have the same dynamic there?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, but I would say with Duncan, I mean, the one thing to think about is that he's a young urban superintendent, non-traditional. And so I think people are going to immediately think of the Michael Bennetts and the Michelle Rees mm-hmm. and the John Deasys. And so I think whatever, even though Duncan is seen as more of a middle course in that, in the kind of the inner circle, I think publicly it would play as more of a win for the New Dems.
You know, one big strike against Duncan? The test scores aren't there. Yeah. All right. Well, it is now time, a very special time that we wait for all week. And then it's over so quickly because it's just 60 seconds long.
Although I've heard there's some demand to double that amount of time.
Yes, which is just crazy. It's craziness. It's crazy talk. But everybody, let's welcome Amber for Amber's Research Minute. Now, we should have warned you, Rick, since you've been on the show, you've been away a little bit. We've been making some changes, mixing up the music, and this is a little bit of the music changes, including the intro. We've gotten some complaints that we got rid of the rap.
I like that rap.
I know. But it was time to make some changes, and to your listeners out there, believe me, just change is hard, but just give it a little bit of time. All right, Amber, speaking of having a little bit of time, you got 60 seconds and it starts now.
Okay, there's a new report out this week by Education Sector. It's called Measuring Skills for the 21st Century. Now, we all know that standardized multiple choice tests don't always do well assessing students' knowledge of 21st century workplace and higher order thinking skills, especially since we're in a global marketplace. But there are a variety of new evolving assessment forms that do better with this, some more reliable and cost effective than others. And that Importantly, don't rely on human scorers. One is Britain's ITC assessment, where students use various technology applications to complete a series of online tasks. Another is computer adaptive testing, where the questions adjust in difficulty based on the student's prior answers. The report, which is more like a discussion than a research piece, closes with a plea for a larger investment in the development of newer and more nimble assessment systems.
And Amber, you came in well under 60 seconds. That was nice.
That was tight.
Well, in all honesty, the report was a little thin.
Oh.
Snap.
So yeah, if I'm on the Ed Trust hit list, I think Amber Winkler is going to be on the Ed Sector hit list.
I mean, it was a good discussion. A research report, it wasn't, but it was a good discussion, absolutely, of the issue of we need better tests if we want to measure
So you can have it with a muffin and a cup of coffee and just sit down and hang out with this report.
Yes. You could argue that Education Sector lately has published a lot of discussion pieces.
Discussion pieces.
But in terms of, you know, original empirical research, not as much.
That's right.
I smell a smackdown brewing.
All right, Amber. Well, before we get into all that, what is the song that goes along with this?
The song is called iGeneration. It's by MC Lars. It's about the new generation and the way they use technology. iGeneration. Hey! Talking about the iGeneration. Generation, new organization meant optimization and unification when imagination gave participation in creation of culture and manifestation. The Berlin Wall fell. All right, that would be props to Laura, our new media director, for finding that great song.
Ooh. Well, that sample was as long as the research minute, I do believe.
It's good, though. I like it. Okay, so, so bottom line here, Amber, I mean, is this whole 21st century skills thing, I mean, isn't this all a bunch of baloney? I mean, are there really different skills kids need now than they did 10 years ago?
I mean, I would argue the technology piece is not hooey, you know. I mean, I think that we do need to know a lot more about technology and how to use technology and how to measure kids' knowledge of technology in this new world.
But these are kids that are on Facebook and MySpace, and I mean, you think they're not learning how to use technology?
Well, I mean, here's the other thing. I remember getting asked about this when I was like a planetologist, right, a couple decades ago. And they asked, we were talking about this technology thing. And I said, look. The more advanced cars get, the less you actually have to know about what goes on inside cars. You know, in 1950, you actually had to understand what was in your engine and to be a mechanic. You know, today, you basically look at a couple of dials, and if you don't know what to do with, you throw it out, and you have to order a new part from, you know, one of the few remaining auto suppliers. So, I mean, I just wonder, I mean, in terms of actually utilizing computers or communications devices, how much do you actually need to know other than how to punch a couple of buttons today?
Well, and I think a lot of people talk about workplace skills, you know.
So
and
being
I think
nice to each other and that kind of stuff?
Well, I don't know if it's that, but I mean, I think it's, yeah, I mean, maybe.
Not being a raging bigot?
Well, that helps.
Yeah, that does help. Yeah. It does.
I mean, like, because, you know, Murnane and Levy, when they talked about the 21st century skills in that 1996 book, I guess, they said, you know, you need to work in small teams with diverse people. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that means to me is that you've got to be able to, like, you know, sit up straight and talk to people in a cooperative way.
Well, and the tired argument is that multiple choice tests don't measure higher order thinking skills, you know, and that's debatable. You know, I think you can craft a question that can do that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, advanced placement tests, people seem to think, do a pretty good
but
job.
I mean, the IB test, which is often held up as, you know, a good example of a good higher order thinking test, has numerous hours and hours and hours that they spend training the examiners, which is extremely costly.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I don't have any problem with spending more money on tests. This is one area where I think a little more spending could go a long way. Mm-hmm. But I do still feel like this 21st century thing, look, that's what extracurricular activities are all about, right? I mean, kids are getting a lot of that good stuff from sports, from student council, from 4-H, from all these things. Let's let school be primarily about the intellectual development of kids. I will now get off my soapbox.
Okay.
Thank you, Amber. Yes. Amber's Research Minute.
That was top shelf, man.
I'm telling you, Rick.
That was top
shelf. You know,
ever
since Laura came, I'm telling you, the show is it's much better produced. You know, we're on our A game, I feel like.
Well, I just think Amber has really raised kind of the research quotient of Fordham. People used to say Fordham issues kind of discussion briefs.
Yeah.
But not on the Winkler watch.
That's right. You know, although, so here's the deal, Rick, though. A certain study of ours from 2004 is getting a lot of play. It was in a Clarence Page column yesterday. It was about where teachers send their own children to school and that many of them send it to private schools. Now, if you go back and look at that study, I'm not sure you'll find it to be the strongest methodologically. And yet it gets huge press. So what does that mean?
You're gonna hire a full-time research assistant?
No, we have a full-time research assistant. And she's here to rate that reform. Staffer, welcome back to the show. Tell us, what reform are you rating this week?
Actually, the reforms this week kind of put me to sleep. So instead, I bring you an edition of Rate That Solution. Today, I bring you a story of the high school rivalries, which we all know can be rather notorious, and that victory in these situations is no laughing matter. And these sorts of do-or-die competitions usually result in harmless activities like stealing the rival school's huge furry man suit mascot or toilet papering the houses of the football team's starting lineup. But it seems the standing rivalry between El Paso's Chapin High School and Andrus High School was all this and more. In fact, the ladies of the Chapin High School dance team were taking no chances as they prepared for their face-off with the Andrus High School dance team.
Bring it on!
Exactly. Perhaps ruining their uniforms with paint the night before, or working in some karate kicks into their routines to land squarely in their opponents' faces, all great ideas. However, these girls couldn't actually wait for the match to begin, and they were helped in their endeavor to go straight for the jugular with a long-standing pre-competition tradition, exchanging sweet treats with the other team. You know, like brownies and cookies and cupcakes.
Oh, I see where this is going.
But instead of using salt instead of sugar, or vinegar instead of vanilla, can you tell I'm an expert? The ladies of the Chapin High School dance team decide they need to bowl over the competition, literally. And let me tell you, this recipe sounds simply scrumptious.
The old Lex-Lax cupcake?
Mm-hmm. We're getting there. Chocolate, butter, eggs, flour, vanilla extract, sugar, Clorox, rat poison, and laxatives.
Oh, that's not funny.
I guess making your opponents fat just doesn't cut it when you can actually kill them. Ooh. And apparently there was so much X-lax in these petit four that those who consumed them would have experienced organ failure due to dehydration almost immediately.
Ooh.
Luckily, none of the offending confections was consumed, although it remains unclear how the Andrus girls figured out that death was hidden in their chocolate. But I guess the Chapin girls took Veterans Day to heart when they decided to wage biological warfare on the poor girls of the Andrus High School dance team. No responses yet from the district. So as for problem definition, well, the Chapin girls certainly wanted to win, so I'll give them an A for effort on that score. And as for execution, these girls may turn out to be serial killers in the making, but they sure found a strategy that would make sure they won, even if it was by default. And I certainly pity the college admissions committees that deny these girls applications, since they may actually find the coffee creamer at that next committee meeting is Drano.
Ooh, wow.
Wow, that's harsh.
I see the references to the Mean Girls, right, when they had something or other that made the rival
Heathers.
Fat, right?
Right, because Mean Girls was just derivative from Heathers.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable, though, man.
Yeah, that's not cool.
I mean, what the hell kind of country are we living in?
So, I mean, do we know? I mean, are these girls suspended? Are they, I mean,
yes,
in jail? Or
they've been suspended. What I particularly enjoyed was that this happened on Monday, or it happened on either Monday or Tuesday, and the response from the district was, "Our office is closed. Come back tomorrow, and we'll give you a statement." So it's unclear really what the response is.
I mean, they should be in
there.
Jail, basically. It's like attempted murder.
You know, the question becomes, at what point do people have trouble figuring out these boundaries?
You know,
people can't draw the line between that and a rat poison. That's just.
Whew. All right, Steph. You kind of finished us out there on a little
Sorry
bit of a down
that.
Note there.
Whew. Well, maybe it will cheer our listeners to know that the developments on the podcast, which involve all this snappy new music, have also resulted in some extraordinary dance moves on the part of Mike Petrilli and Rick Hess.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, today included some robot, some raising the roof, and some head chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
Chicken
the
head.
Saturday Night Live.
The bobblehead.
Kind of, bobbing. Yeah.
So just imagine that. While you listen.
Well, I think what Staffer's implying is that we need to eventually go to video podcasting.
next week, baby. Next week, the sprinkler.
The sprinkler. Oh, yeah.
What about
the shopping
cart?
And the lawnmower. Yeah, baby. All right. That's all the time we have. Thank goodness for this week. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Education Gadfly Show podcast at excellence.net. Signing off.